Radio NFM, die stem van die Namakwa mense, moedig die vryheid van spraak en die uiting van uiteenlopende sienings aan. Sienings van luisteraars en ateliergaste is hul eie en nie die van Radio NFM nie. Radio NFM neem alle programme op aan. Herhalende opmerkings, krui taal, discriminerende sienings of skeltaal sal ook nie geduld word.
From the red pen of the history educator, now we are pitching to the other side to the same topic, whereby South Africa's school's history curriculum could be on the verge of a major shift, where the Department of Education has released a draft revision of the CAPS Land History Curriculum, placing a stronger emphasis to the African history, local experience and critical thinking skills. But what does this really mean for the pupils, educators, and how do we understand the past as the nation? To help us unpack this, we are being joined by David Elliott, the Adjunct Land Academic at UNISA, whose research also said to be focusing on to the history education curriculum development. Also, Mr. Elliott there is having some of the thoughts when it comes to it. Mr. David, thank you very much for joining us on this afternoon.
It's great to be with you, man. Thanks for the opportunity.
With all of that, what would you say is your interpretation of this revised Land History curriculum? Is there some of the importance having that there are some bit of a changes which are being made?
Yeah, so I think as someone who, and just for some context for the listeners, who's done critical history writing and history research as part of my postgraduate work, as part of my PhD, which currently is under examination. I think one of the key things that emerges from the focus of the new curriculum is that it's really interested in doing effective historiography. What we mean by that is that we're not just trying to tell people about orders of events and chronology and, you know, this thing happened at this time. We're inviting people to continue on this journey of thinking deeper and more effectively about history. How did history come to be? Who gets to decide what events are important? How are events ordered and focused on? How do we understand biases within history and these sorts of things? And it's critically important in a context like Southern Africa, not just South Africa, but Southern Africa and even Africa more broadly, because for a very long time, history was dictated in Africa by the colonial project, by things like apartheid. And the shift in the history curriculum, I think, is part of an ongoing shift that's been happening since the sort of end of formal apartheid to say, how do we more effectively grapple with complex histories, including our own complex history and our place as Africa within broader global histories? So I think it's a really interesting opportunity to participate as well as a country, because these decisions haven't been made for us. These have been proposed to us and said, you know, give us feedback, tell us what you think. But generally, the philosophy and the approach of the new curriculum, I think, challenges a lot of historic biases in the way historical inquiry and doing history has been imagined, and offers us some really exciting resources, I think, to do history better and to train the next generation of thinkers to think better about their history.
We just spoken right now before you to the educator, history educator, having some a bit of a reservations of how the history is being interpreted in a one narrow island mindset, you know, and how the story should be told, leaving out especially to some of the indigenous communities being left out as to the history of how it took place. You know, it's not only one community, which is black people, but also there is a matter of your Khoi and San Nama communities, which also have suffered under the hands of the Western land nations. Do you think there is an increased focus mostly to the pre-colonial African societies and the trade networks, which are filling these important gaps, or is there any risk of overcorrection?
You know, I think it's what's really helpful about this curriculum is that it foregrounds really clearly that it's seeking to address an already existing bias, and it doesn't do so by pretending like it doesn't have its own subjective position, meaning that it has opinions and biases itself. The one critical thing about doing history at any point from any perspective is that it always carries with it some kind of bias. And it's very dangerous when any one person tries to present any kind of grand narrative. It's exactly like you mentioned now. What happens when you present a grand narrative of history is that local indigenous communities slowly but surely get pushed out of the picture, or very suddenly get excluded from participating in conversation about history, and their histories are not considered as part of these broader discourses, these broader narratives about our country, about Africa, and about global societies even. So I think, generally speaking, what we see from this curriculum isn't necessarily an overcorrection, but steps towards changes that have needed to happen for some time, steps towards the inclusion of voices and communities who for long stretches have been excluded from meaningful participation. I think one of the most critical ways this is being done is just through the inclusion of other languages. This has been a cry for many years, for centuries in Southern Africa, that languages would be included with greater equality, because languages are carriers of history. They carry our cultures, they carry our stories. And so some of the shifts in the curriculum, just to include local idioms, local poems, local stories, local myths, create such an important access point for foregrounding voices, stories, histories that for a long time have been left out of the conversation. So I think at this stage, we should be optimistic about the orientation of the document. I think it's very clear in the document that they're not interested in erasing European histories or North American histories, but they're interested in erasing colonial histories in Africa, but they're interested in more effectively contextualizing those histories, recognizing that Africa existed before colonialism, that there were various forms of resistance to colonialism, that, as you highlight as well, it wasn't just black South Africans who experienced suffering under colonialism and apartheid, but, for example, the histories of Indian South Africans, the various global networks that were in place to ensure that Indian South Africans came to South Africa in the 19th century and that sort of thing. So there's this broadening of the scope of history to invite people to see that the stories they've heard, the grand narratives they've heard, are sometimes themselves very biased, and that this is a step towards recognizing perhaps we need to have a greater focus on what histories have shaped us, and give voice to the stories that for a really long time haven't been given enough attention.
What are some of the strengths of this approach when it comes to schools setting, if we are talking about the oral history, indigenous knowledge systems, and could this shift change as to how the learners connect within their own communities and identities, having that speaking from the grounds of Namakwa, whereby it is, or let us generally speak about South Africa, where it is very diverse itself, you know. We have your Indians, your Nama, your Khoisan, your black people, your multiracial. We have your Western Island people who also have identified to be South Africans also. And also the other African nation land also having to migrate to South Africa and learning the curriculum when it comes to South Africa. Will there be everyone feel included in that, also learning about the origins of how this nation came to be built?
You know, I think it's a really critical thing to highlight, this step to include oral histories. And it is, I think, deeply important, because as human beings, before we do any writing, before we learn how to read and write, the first way that we communicate our stories to each other is through talking to each other. Language is this, like I said earlier, this critical means of communicating our histories to each other. And even though sort of Western cultures and Western societies, and perhaps even sort of descendants of European immigrants and settler colonies here in South Africa have maybe some biases towards written language, and that's kind of seeped into generally how we thought about history and what matters in history, in every culture across the world, oral histories, oral traditions, the stories that we tell each other are such critically important resources for remembering our collective history, and for getting a better understanding of how events have actually taken place within our history. And so for the average pupil, or in fact the average community of pupils, because this isn't just an individualized thing, it will affect entire communities of people, it takes a moment, I think, to give due credit, due recognition, due focus to the ways in which these communities of storytelling have passed histories on from one generation to the next, that pass sometimes through mythologies, through stories that we've told, but also through factual historical accounts. Turning to oral histories gives us the chance to really meaningfully capture the texture of those parts of our history, and they fill important gaps in our historical record, because one of the things we know in South Africa is that through processes like colonialism and apartheid, histories were erased, histories were lost, cultures were harmed and diminished. And one of the key mechanisms of resistance was oral history. It was people telling their stories. And so I think as a nation building project, it's really, really critical. It gives us chances to listen to each other's stories, each other's histories, each other's narrative about how we've all differently experienced different parts of our history from before colonialism to the present. It helps us better negotiate the wounds of our history and also to celebrate the triumphs and the joys of our history. It helps us find common ground in the ways in which our histories overlap with each other. And starting that young with students teaches them that they have this resource available to them, that the histories that they hear from their grandparents, from their grandmother and their grandfather, from their auntie and their uncle, from their cousins, from all these different people, these histories also matter. It helps to correct sometimes this bias of thinking that the most important history is either the history that we see coming from dominant powerful nations or the histories that we just read in, say, old textbooks. For me, one of the things I challenged in my PhD was the idea that the written histories we've received from colonial missionaries are the only histories we should listen to. It helps us to realize that there's gaps in those histories and there's resources we can gain from other places.
How much of political influence would you say this curricular change has? Because we know down the line, somewhere, somehow, there could be those who claim the credit of the changes which are being made. How do you think about when it comes to this case?
So when it comes to any history, I think basically any and all written history, oral history, various forms of history, because they are narratives that tie events together, they are almost inescapably political. There is always power involved in the creation of the stories that we tell each other to remember the past, to remember events and how they played out. And so the first kind of assumption that we have to deal with is the idea that history, as it's been taught before this, hasn't had any political influence. History always deals with, especially the way that history is taught in schools, it talks about various civilizations and it talks about how nations have navigated various things and how communities have navigated various things. Those dynamics, those realities are inherently political. The question I think we have to ask is, are the histories that we're hearing and the ways that we're teaching history overtly putting forward where their biases are and inviting people to be critical of those things? And one of the things that I think is evidenced very clearly by the suggested changes to the curriculum is that it's inviting this process of teaching people how to do effective historical inquiry, not just telling you these are the narratives you must now believe about South Africa and you can never question them. It's teaching people, how do you think about what sources influence history? Whose histories do we listen to the most? Why do we lean towards this history instead of that history? What does it mean for the past to affect the present? It's taking a step to be aware of itself, to be aware of its shortcomings, to be aware of the fact that it's located, that knowledge is always developed from a place. You know, historical knowledge is not the same as doing scientific inquiry where, you know, you can go up to water and water will always be, you know, the molecule of H2O. It will always be that. It will always be that chemical makeup. History is not the same. It invites us to complex conversation because in many ways, like I said at the start, it has always been and probably always will be political. It will always have power imbalances, power contestations, different interpretations of the same event. And so I think this curriculum is empowering students to recognize that those dynamics have always existed in the writing of histories, and that it's important for us to be aware of those biases, to investigate sources carefully, to investigate narratives carefully, and to listen to various stories and narratives we want to develop
David,
an understanding of history.
Yeah, I would like us to hold on to that bit before we head to the door. I would like us to go quickly onto the break as we're having this conversation of South Africa's new history curriculum, which is set to prioritize African perspective. And with all of that being said, and for you, is it worth of being noting?
It's finally here, the Spar mobile SIM card. Get yours today at Springbok Super Spar, Tops at Spar, or Save More Bashig. Just pop in by the customer service desk or any till point or ask any friendly staff member to help you out. Your Spar mobile SIM comes preloaded with 300 megabytes of data and 10 Rand airtime, absolutely free and non-expiring. Need help getting started? You can Rika and activate in store, and it'll take less than 10 minutes and a SPAR employee or agent will assist you. Prefer doing things your way? No stress. Activate from home by simply sending the word RECA to 063 901 0001. Then follow the instructions using your ID or passport number and the SIM serial number. Once activated, pop that SIM into your phone and start earning free data on selected SPAR items right away. Yes, shopping just got a data bonus. Plus, don't forget to download the SPAR mobile app from the Google Play Store, App Store or App Gallery. Log in using your SPAR mobile number or linked cell phone number. Stay connected and get rewarded with SPAR. SPAR Mobile. It's data the SPAR way.
To empower, to educate, to entertain, to inform.
There it is. Welcome back to Radio NFM, whereby we're at the neck of our feet as we're heading out. Right up in there, we are still continuing or concluding the conversation around the history curriculum revision. On the line, we're having David Elliott, an academic researcher, right up in there on when it comes to such matters. But with all of that, David, let us touch it to the bases as we're heading to the door. As we know that some may have some reservations when it comes to would there be a risk that this is trying to correct past imbalances and the curriculum could unintentionally create new gaps. As we know, as mentioned earlier on, that there are some of the reservations when it comes to the teachers of how this is being interpreted and what is the book is in the books, the textbooks, basically what should be taught to the children. And you also on the other side, having said that the communities, or rather as people, we should also self-educate also in exploring more than to the box that we're in right now of what the kind of a history that we know. But what would you like the policymakers to better understand about the realities of teaching history in South African classrooms, having that is the next generation? So it is up to them also as to how they will be interpreting it as to the events of the history of how they have been taught.
Yeah, so I think from my position as someone who has largely focused on the practice of studying history as part of my PhD and has sort of taken the approach of being critical about history, I think there's a few things that can be noted. The first is that the process of learning history and developing history is something that takes time and it's something that is debated. And so long as that space is given for people to think, to wrestle, to grapple, to offer differences of opinion, to contest, then I do not think anyone needs to be panicked or afraid. And I think this draft curricula really pushes for that. It's not interested, again, in this kind of swing against Europe or North America. It's not designed in its essence as a sort of reaction, but rather it seeks to say, how can we have a positive discussion about Africa's history before the most recent histories we've had of colonialism and apartheid, and how can we move forward to having conversations in the future that consider various sources of history and various ways of doing history that are broader, more incisive, more effective than what has been done in the past. And so I think the possibilities that this curriculum presents is what I think we should focus in on. And of course, as I say that, the possibilities for people to disagree with me are open. And the draft curricula exists for people to go and read, accessible online, to go and read the Government Gazette. Any person can go and read it, contest it, send their feedback to the Department of Education. So if you would like to do that, if that's something that weighs on you, please do it. It's part of being effective at teaching history, at discussing history. We need diverse voices. We need disagreement. It helps us get better at it. It helps us hone it. And I think that is evidenced by this curriculum, that it's interested in that kind of discourse. It's interested in that kind of discussion.
That it is, says to be David Elliott, a Judel and academic at UNISA, sharing his insight on the proposed changes to South Africa's history curriculum, where the draft is currently open for the public comment. So if you would like to share your say, now it is your time to get involved. Mr. Elliott, thank you very much, man, for joining us on this afternoon, sharing your thoughts, critical ones, having that you're a researcher also looking deeper to these matters.
It was great to be with you. Thank you for having me.
There it is. All right, up in there. For you there at home, you can 066-252-0187 or Facebook page, which is Radio NFM 89-98.7. And it is said that your comments may be submitted as follows to the Director General for the Attention of Florissa Modipe at modipa.f@dbe.gov.za.